Hello, welcome back from lunch. I'll do my best to keep you awake. This is a small commercial for last year's talk, since Sandy was mentioning that I made my zeroth slide that I couldn't number it zero for some reason, blame LaTeX. But the final paper is now out. It wasn't when I gave this talk last year. It's in this comms ACM. Find it in your library. Otherwise, just go here and get it from my webpage. This year's talk is something different. Pico. No more passwords. So the story is, can we get rid of passwords altogether? I'll first try and discuss with you why we would want to do that. And second, I'll present a possible solution for so doing. The paper for this this presentation is out. The final version is here on this tiny URL or on my webpage. Just search my unusual surname, which is pronounced Staiano, by the way. And it's not out yet. The proceedings are still being produced, but the final paper is there on this URL. So passwords were an okay method for user authentication in the distant past, when we had only one or two passwords to remember. And at that time, also, it was okay to just have maybe 8 characters for a password, and it was beyond brute force. Nowadays, things are not quite like that anymore. And even very topically, the wonderful XKCD has come up with this comic just this Wednesday, so 2 days ago. And he goes on about, this is XKCD 936, if you want to see it on your own computer later, makes an uncommon non-gibberish base word, makes some substitutions of 0 for O and 4 for A and all that kind of stuff, adds a symbol and a number because you're told to do that, and all these little squares are the bits of entropy that you gain by doing all these various things, capitalizing this and so on. Then it computes how much entropy do you get out of doing all this. Not that much. And so it's easy to guess this password. And then if you look at the guy who has to remember it, it's not so easy to actually remember it. So he suggests an alternative, which is to have a number of random common words. You don't even have to make funny spellings or capitalization, but you have to have a few instead of just one. And with this passphrase made of several of them, then you add up the entropies of each one of them. Each one is here assigned to be just 11 bits, but if you have 4, then you have 44 bits, which is harder to guess than the one above. And it's also easy to remember because this absurd thing makes an easy mnemonic. If you visualize a horse who is correct about naming this thing battery staple. So that's a good suggestion for getting over some of the difficulties of making a hard to guess but memorable password. And in fact, this suggestion is at the base of something that Marcus Jacobson came up with recently, which is, he calls it fast words. It's a way of entering passwords on smartphones where it's really a pain to have to do this kind of stuff and pressing shift and doing symbols and so on. So this is all very nice, but it still doesn't really solve the problems of passwords as they are today, where we don't just have one or two passwords, but we have lots and lots of things that require us to have a password, and we are not allowed to have the same password for several things, because as soon as one of them gets compromised, all the other entities where you use the same passwords are now vulnerable. And so you can have the hardest to guess password in the world. You can have something like this, and if you use the same password here and in another site that again then gets compromised, it doesn't matter how hard it was, it's compromised on all the other places where you used it. So the self-righteous and arrogant security people tell ordinary users that their passwords must be unguessable and unbrute-forcible. So unguessable means you cannot have the name of your pet. It has to be something that cannot be gleaned even by someone who trolls your Facebook page. Unbrute-forcible means they have to be long enough and with enough special characters and crap and all that stuff. They must be all different. If you have 37 different counts, they have to be all different. If you have more, then more. They must be memorable and memorized because you're not allowed to write them down. And you must type them correctly, even though when you do actually type them, you don't see what you're typing. You get only dots or asterisks if you're lucky. You get nothing otherwise. And so if you make a mistake about here while you're typing this password, basically all you can do is delete everything and start again. And besides, you must also change the password every month or two, because otherwise, you know, you open up a longer window of vulnerability. Now, the correct answer to this series of requirements is this, is noticing that the intersection of the possibilities that each of these constraints restricts us to is the empty set. So nobody, not even the person who asks you to do all these things, is capable of following this password policy. So there's no surprise that users hate passwords, and this is not news. I mean, I have peppered the presentation with tiny writings, which are actually references to academic papers. This is the classic by Adams and Sasse, "Users Are Not the Enemy," from COMS ACM 1999, and it's not the first nor the last time that we observed that passwords are not the security mechanism that users like best. So we could also observe from the viewpoint of economics that passwords are a bit of a tragedy of the commons. Tragedy of the commons is that phenomenon where you have commons where you can graze your cows, and anybody is free, anybody in the village is free to bring a cow, and they can just graze the grass that is there. But of course, this has a finite capacity, and if you bring too many cows in there, then it will all become wasteland and nobody can get any benefit out of it. But for the individual farmer, even though, you know, it would be fair only to bring these three cows, well, for me, it's just fine if I bring another cow, because I get the full benefit of feeding another cow. Well, I'm not really disturbing anybody else. And this is just the same as what happens here, where the farmers, in this case, are the people who put up the authentication system based on passwords. So, for example, a developer who makes a new website, say, okay, well, how am I going to authenticate my users? Well, what's the easiest thing I can do? A password, of course. And I don't have to explain it to them. They already use a password in 37 other instances. And why is it going to be a problem if I also do it for the 38th? It shouldn't be any worse than all the others. And users are already used to that. However, it is a tragedy of the commons, because the more passwords we add to that, and the less manageable we make it, and we already exceed the memory capacity of a normal terrestrial human being with the passwords that we have today. So, the previous slide was about why passwords are bad just from the usability viewpoint. That's not the end of the story. The passwords are not so great from the security viewpoint either. There's a number of attacks that are made possible by the fact that the requirements on the previous page cannot be satisfied simultaneously. So because it's impossible to have all 37 passwords be that complicated, then the passwords that users actually adopt are going to be weak and are going to be easy to guess or to brute force in automatic ways. And it's going to be the case that users do use the same password on different accounts. In that case, just breaking one account will give access to all the others that use the same one. Because passwords are so complicated and unmanageable, in a number of situations, users will just forget the password and will have to get a substitute from the system administrators, and the system administrator will have to figure out some alternative way, such as sending it to their Gmail account. So you are lowering the security of your main thing to the security of this alternative backup method for recovering the password. So it's, so long as you can break into someone's free email account, then you can presumably get a number of their passwords or have it sent there and compromise their other accounts that way. Or because passwords are difficult to remember, they will be written down somewhere. The classic thing is the post-it in the vicinity of the monitor. And so this enables either casual attacks by the proverbial cleaner or targeted attacks if you are worthy of spear phishing case in which they send someone to your office and see what is near your desk, there's a high likelihood that some passwords can be recovered that way. Passwords are also vulnerable to phishing, which is, as you know, the situation where they make a pretend web page where you type your password thinking that you're typing it to the correct verifier, and instead you're typing it into the page of your attacker. And you could describe phishing as a mechanized industrial scale form of social engineering. You don't have to actually phone up the person and tell them a fake story. You just spread it on everyone, and the ones who respond are the ones that you can scan. And keylogging is a somehow related way of overhearing the password, but in this case you just install some malware on their machine just under the keyboard, which listens to every key that gets pressed. All these things are enabled by passwords. All these attacks are enabled by passwords, and so passwords themselves are a security problem as well as a usability problem. This famous quote from a certain Bill Gates, 2004 RSA conference: there is no doubt that over time people are going to rely less and less on passwords. People use the same password on different systems, they write them down, and they just don't meet the challenge for anything you really want to secure. Wise words. Passwords are dead has been something that we have been saying for a long time. Maybe we should correct these two. Passwords should be dead. They are not quite dead yet. But we wish them well. So passwords are unusable and insecure. They are the worst of both worlds. What can we do about it? So if we could start again from zero, what would we use instead of passwords? If we could restart from scratch. Of course, we can't restart from scratch. We have compatibility shackles that we have to take into account. But let's not just think of what we can do within compatibility constraints. Let's try and see where the boundaries of what can be done are, regardless of that. There have been a number of proposals for fixing the problem of passwords on the web. I think this is not enough. A password is a password and remains a password whether it's on the web or at the login prompt of your computer or in the BIOS, or password or PIN or passphrase, it's all the same. Something that you have to type in your ATM or in your car alarm or your burglar alarm. All these things are, if the password is a nuisance for the user, it's a nuisance regardless of who's asking for it. It's not just if you fix the web passwords, then the rest of the world is fine with passwords. If passwords are bad, they are bad everywhere. So I want, with this work, to propose a solution for getting rid of all passwords. And my work is called Pico. Pico, not the Pico of the international system prefix, which means a very small thing. And not the Pico that they use in Chile either. I'm told that this is a rude word. It's Pico as Pico della Mirandola, who was an Italian philosopher who was famous for a very large memory. So this is, assume that you have something else with a large memory instead of you having to remember the passwords. So the goals of Pico, which is going to be a portable device, so it shifts something you know to something you have, is first of all, you will have no more passwords or passphrases or pins or graphical squiggles or faces or any other crap to remember. The second thing is that this method has to be scalable to hundreds and thousands of different verifiers, because this is where we are headed anyway, and this is what dooms all the systems based on memorizing a different thing for every account. And it should be no less secure than passwords, which is trivial when you see how insecure passwords are, but I actually mean no less secure than passwords would be if you could do all these things that you cannot do simultaneously. On top of that, Pico, on top of these first minimum requirements, design requirements, Pico also offers a number of usability benefits, which I'll describe in a moment, and a number of security benefits. Besides that, there are some things that you might expect out of a password replacement system, which Pico doesn't offer. They are not goals for Pico. In particular, not costing anything, in the sense that passwords don't cost anything to the guy who makes a new website. They can set up a password system and they don't have to pay to give a token to every user. Also, I don't attempt to be backwards compatible. This is not just a client-side solution which leaves the server the way it is. So with this said, as I have presented this work to various audiences, about half a dozen by now, I have evolved a series of benefits that various password replacement systems might offer. And I'm using this as a kind of gauge to compare how this thing goes. But I want to state, before we get into the technical part, that the point of this is, if you're going to fix the world, you know, we have this problem with passwords, just be bold about it. Don't do things which are just a band-aid, just fixing the pain a little bit for today, which is how I see many password alternatives. In the sense of, okay, instead of remembering a password, you can remember a different shape, or you can do something else, which doesn't go to the root of the problem that if I have to remember 37 of them or 370 of them, it's not going to scale. So I restate again, the purpose of this work on Pico is, what's the best that we can do if we had the luxury, which we, in practice we don't have, of restarting from zero, designing something else instead of passwords. And after that, we can look at this as a kind of asymptote. What can we do within the constraints we actually have that gets closer to that? And I'm not so arrogant as to claim that Pico is this best possible thing we can do, but at least it's a constructive proposal of something that attempts to cover all the bases, and how can we propose a better solution than this one if this one is unsatisfactory? At least we have something to discuss about. This is not something that is meant to replace passwords tomorrow. It's not something that you do a startup and get rich soon, although if you do, please be my guest. Be my guest in the sense that, as I said, even at the end of the paper, I have not patented any of this. So if you do want to get rich and you manage to, then it's fine by me. So features of the password replacement systems that I have been looking at in this growing body of related work that has now grown so big that I decided to just find some co-authors and write a separate survey paper about it, because it was just becoming too large for the original Pico paper. There's these categories, and if I just sneak ahead, this survey paper we are working on, let me see if I can do that. Okay, oh, I was there a moment ago. Not there, okay. Imagine a big matrix, so big that the writing is so small you can't see it. And there's columns that represent benefits that a password replacement system might offer. And they are clustered in chunks, minimum requirements, things that are promised by Pico, things that are non-goals for Pico, and other things that I consider for fairness. For example, the fact that most of these other things I look at have been implemented and Pico hasn't been implemented, so it's easier for Pico to have lots of dots here. And so, you know, just because I'm a nice guy, I have this other column there. What I'm describing in the page I'm trying to get back to is the columns of that matrix, which are clustered in these lines. So the first minimum requirements, these three things: memoryless, so you have to do something where users don't have to memorize any secrets, right? Scalable, this means that even if you have hundreds or thousands of different accounts, it must still be manageable for a normal human being. Security people and engineers and computer science are not considered normal human beings in this context. Secure, in the sense that we just said, as secure as passwords would be if you could actually do all these things you can't do. And also, as part of the minimum requirements, since I'm doing something that is token-based, there are two fundamental minimum requirements that I also have to consider. It has to be loss-resistant, since it's based on a token. If I lose the token, I must not lose access forever to all my authenticators. And also it must be theft resistant. If someone steals my token and has access to it, it must not be a free passport to identity theft. So this is a list, two lists of benefits that Pico offers, and I put this up front in the sense of sticking my neck out. This, I promise that this system will do that, and you can beat me up if you think it doesn't. And works for all is a poor way of saying that I don't want a replacement just for the case of web passwords, for the sake of argument, or things you type into your computer. It has to work for anything which is a secret you have to memorize. So it should work for your burglar alarm as well and all that other stuff. From anywhere, it means that you should not be tied to a specific computer to do this from. No search, it means if you have tens or hundreds or thousands of different verifiers you supply credentials to, you shouldn't have to go through a list of hundreds or thousands of things to find the appropriate credential to send out. No typing, because even the fact of typing a password is quite a nuisance from a usability viewpoint. I mean, if I, one possible password replacement system or substitute or thing that alleviates some of the problems of passwords is writing them down on a piece of paper. This is not ideal from a number of security viewpoints, but at least it offers the memoryless feature. I don't have to remember the stuff anymore. However, it still has the usability problem that if I have a password like the ones in the thought bubble a few slides ago here, it's not fun to type the password, even if I don't have the burden of remembering it. It's just not pleasant. So with Pico, you have this benefit of not having to type the password. In fact, because there is no password, there's a public key protocol instead. Continuous, this is a different type of benefit, where if you look at what happens with a password, you type in a password into your computer, and the verifier assumes you are there, but you may keep doing stuff for several hours, maybe for the whole day, and it has to still assume that you have been there all along, whereas maybe at some point you just went to the toilet and someone used your computer while you were logged in, or as happened, as we were told in the other thing, just stole your computer, but that's a different story. So continuous is a benefit whereby you authenticate with an explicit action at the beginning, but then the verifier can keep on checking that you are still there. Now, this is, you should raise a red flag, because I'm using a token, so the verifier can actually check that the token is still there. So how does it link that to the fact that I am still with the token? That I will deal with that extensively in future slides. Security benefits of Pico. You will not be able to come up with a weak password. That's a obvious consequence of the fact that there's no passwords. You will not be able to reuse the password in other with other verifiers, same as above. By the way, in the paper, I used the terminology of apps to describe the entities that verify your credentials. It's not the same as the apps on a smartphone. It's nothing to do with it. The app is just the verifier of this prover-verifier pair. No phishing. It will not be possible for a malicious app to fool your Pico into giving the credentials. No eavesdropping, it will do you no good to listen on the exchange that happens between the Pico and the app. No keylogging, well, you don't type the password, so there's nothing to keylog. No surfing means no shoulder surfing. You cannot look at what someone is typing because there's no typing. No linkage, this is instead a privacy benefit of not being able to connect the credentials used for one account to those used in another account, and by that way saying that it's the same person using both. As I said earlier, things that I don't consider goals for Pico are being no cost in the sense that passwords are. Of course, passwords have a cost for the implementer. There has to be something that is done at the back end. They have an even greater cost for the user, as I have explained earlier, in terms of usability, but no cost in the sense of, okay, I can deploy this. An example that Cormac Hurley made, which makes the point, is that Facebook, for example, got to 1 million users before it got external funding, and for this 1 million users, it had to have a way of authenticating them, and if it had had anything that had an additional dollar cost per user, it would not have been able to reach that million users without an injection of cash, even if the cost per user had been very small. So, but that's not the goal for Pico, being no cost. And other goals are, the other goals that Pico doesn't try to go after is working without changing the app, the backend, or working without changing the client side. Other things that I said in the last column I will mention when I compare Pico against other things are whether the proposed password replacement has been implemented, Pico hasn't been, whether it is open in the sense of if it has any code, is this released as open source? Well, Pico doesn't have any code yet. I have a student who will be working on this next year, and the code of Pico will be released as open source, but at the moment is there is no code to release. Is it widely used? In the paper, I define this fairly arbitrarily as does it have a million people who have actually used that? Because if it has been implemented and it's open, but it's just, you know, a prototype for academic purposes, it's different from whether it's something that has been adopted by millions of people. No carry, this is something that obviously Pico will never satisfy, not having to carry anything. It's a token-based thing, of course you'll have to carry something. And no TTP, no trusted third party. It would be, are you relying on something that holds some credentials that would allow this entity to impersonate you if it became malicious? There's a wonderful definition of the trusted computing base by Bob Morris Sr., recently passed away, senior NSA scientist. He said he once said that a trusted component is one that can violate your security policy. So a TTP would be holding a credentials that would allow it to impersonate you if it became malicious. So plan for this talk. First, what Pico promises to offer. I just mentioned that in the previous slide. Next, how Pico works when you have the Pico. How your Pico stops working if someone else has your Pico. It shouldn't be working then. How Pico ensures you can recover if you no longer have your Pico. Some other notable features chosen arbitrarily from all the stuff that's there. Other password replacement solutions, the related work. And then some compromises that one might wish to make in order to reach critical mass, because anytime you have something where it has to be adopted by one end and the other end, then neither end is going to want to do it unless the other end already has done it. And so this is the problem that Pico will face, like any other thing that tries to displace passwords. Everybody has said passwords are dead, passwords should be dead, but still, passwords is what we use all the time anyway. This incumbent is going to be very hard to boot out. And so it may be the case that on the way to world domination, we have to do some compromises. So let's go on to how Pico works when you have it. What does Pico look like? This is something that looks a bit like a smartphone. Pico is not a smartphone. Pico is not a piece of software on a smartphone. But just imagine something like a smartphone, because you have an easy thing to visualize. There's a camera, there's a display, there's a couple of buttons. It's something that's small that you carry all the time. A smartphone is relevant because, although it looks like, you know, who would want to carry another gadget? And people do carry a smartphone. I'm not sure how you get to the stage where you persuade people to carry something like Pico, but there are a very small number of gadgets that have persuaded people that they should carry them. And hopefully Pico would have to be something like that in order to work. It has a radio communication facility, it has a camera, it has a main button and a pairing button. I'll describe what they do. and it has a display. As I said, Pico is not a smartphone. Pico doesn't have to be shaped like a smartphone. Pico could be shaped like a key fob, so long as it had a camera, a display, a pairing button, and a main button. It could be shaped like a watch. It could be shaped like a small MP3 player. It could be shaped like some piece of jewelry that you hang around your neck. Whatever suits you, and whatever suits enough other people that a manufacturer can economically make enough of them to sell them to you for $10. The buttons could be soft buttons like you have in the micro MP3 player, whatever. This is not relevant. It's important to say that in the ideal incarnation, the Pico is not software on a multi-purpose device. It is a dedicated device that does nothing else, because if it's something that holds all your authentication credentials, you don't want to open up a much bigger attack surface by just making it a piece of software on something else that has all the holes that have been described in the technical session for the past 3 days. So how Pico operates, the camera and the radio are there to support a multi-channel protocol. And this multi-channel protocol involves the Pico acquiring a visual code from the app and then having a bidirectional communication with the app. Now, it's unspecified how this bidirectional radio communication works. It could be a local radio communication with the computer that's just in front of the user, which displays this visual code. It could be talking to an access point and then getting to the app through IP. It could be talking through the cellular network. This is not so relevant. What matters is that there is a visual channel which is unidirectional and goes this way, which has the property that the user uniquely specifies what he's pointing at. And then radio, you cannot do that. The radio, you just talk to ghosts somewhere around you, and you don't really know who it is, but you establish who you want to talk to with the visual channel, and then you do all the rest of the stuff over the radio channel, which is bidirectional and can carry more bits. So I have a couple of references here. Main one is McEwen, Perrigan, writer, Seeing is Believing. We had a paper the same year, Multi-Channel Protocols, and it's an idea that is very appropriate for this particular application. How does Pico work? Each app, as I said, app is the name I use for Verifier, has a key pair and a visual code, which is a self-signed certificate for the public key, like this. So this visual code is a hash of a self-signed certificate of the app's public key. You point the Pico at the visual code of your app, and that way you acquire that code, and you signal, you user, signal to your Pico that you want to authenticate to this app. Then the Pico talks to the app through the radio by encrypting any messages to the app's public key after having verified it against this certificate. This defeats the eavesdroppers, of course, and the user cannot be tricked to type the password into the wrong app. That would be the phishing, because, of course, it has acquired the certificate of the app it wants to interact with, and any other thing could copy that thing, but could copy that certificate, but then would not be able to decrypt things encrypted for that public key. So this is essentially the same as SSL, except SSL is based on a public key infrastructure, and this one is not, just self-signed certificates. So anytime you have in the traditional system an app that says user ID and password, in the Pico system you have an app that says user ID and password for legacy authenticators and a visual code. And in that state, the app is also waiting for interaction on the radio channel, radio or IP channel or whatever it is. So the two buttons of the Pico, the main button is the one that you use all the time to authenticate, and the pairing button is the one that you use initially, the first time you pair up with an application. So the first one means let's type the password, although the password doesn't exist anymore. And the first one is, let's set up a password. So we've just seen all that. The visual code gets acquired by the Pico and is used for priming the communication over the radio channel. The Pico inside has storage space for however many apps it wants to support, so potentially thousands, and in each one of them it stores whatever is relevant to that specific pairing. So the key, public key of the app, the private key that the Pico uses to talk to that app. So the Pico has a different key pair for talking to each different app. This ensures the privacy, the no linkage. Is that the question? No. And all these slots, each slot caters for one app, are in a storage space of the Pico that is encrypted. It's encrypted, and when the Pico is near you, it works. When the Pico is away from you, then it's unusable. I'll get back to that. The main button is the one you use to type the passwords in double quotes, offer your credentials to the app, and it works as follows in greater detail. The Pico acquires the app's visual code, which is the public key certificate. The Pico finds that app's public key in its own storage, and if it doesn't find it, then it can't offer the credentials, because it means you never paired with that specific app. It's like saying, let's type the password into this app, but I never set up a password with this app. So what we could do instead is show a phishing warning. If someone, if you really wanted to type your password, I'm using type your password in a loose sense, into this app, I'm telling you, as Pico, I'm telling you, user, that you never actually paired with this. So if it looks like something you thought you paired with, then this may be a phishing attempt. But it won't work anyway. In case it does work, so in case the Pico recognizes this public key as something it had paired with before, then it will make up an ephemeral public key and send it to the app. It's an ephemeral one as opposed to the permanent one for that app, because at that stage the Pico doesn't yet know that the app actually knows the secret key that matches the private key that matches the public one that has been exhibited. So it could be someone who is a fake, who is trying to prize out whether this Pico is there. And so we just send a key just for this interaction, so that we are not giving anything away until the app has proved ownership of its private key. So once that happens, then the Pico can send its long-term public key, and then the app also recognizes it, so does its own challenge, mutual authentication, and then they can set up a session key in the usual way, and then they can do the continuous authentication I mentioned, whereby from then on, over the radio channel, the app can keep checking every few seconds that the Pico is still there. And as I said, you have this mental flag that the Pico is still there. It doesn't necessarily mean the user is still there. We'll get back to that. What happens with the other button, the one you use less frequently, but before the other one for pairing up with an app? The interaction starts very similarly. It does start from exactly the same screen where you have user ID, password. You can do two actions depending which button you press. You can either send credentials if you have paired, or set up credentials if you haven't. Or in fact, you can set up credentials even if you have already paired, because you're still free, unless it's prevented by the higher levels of the application, to set up as many accounts as you wish. You may have a Gmail account. You may go there to the Gmail page and make a new account with a different name, and Pico lets you do that as well. In that case, you will have, for the same app, for the same visual code, you will have several accounts in your Pico for it. So this is something that slightly violates one of the benefits that I announced earlier, which was no search. No search meant just by acquiring the visual code, your Pico will know which app it has to talk to. In this case, if you have several accounts for the same app, then as you acquire the visual code for that app. Obviously, the Pico will not know which one of the user accounts you meant, and it will have to somehow interact with you and make you select one of them. But this is still scalable because you will only have to choose among the different accounts you have for that particular app. So, where are we? If the app is known, then worn, but repairing is still allowed. That's what I just said. You can have multiple accounts. The Pico gets the full key, full public key of the app through the radio, checks it against the visual code, because otherwise what's the point if you don't check, and stores it in one of the slots we saw earlier, responds with the ephemeral public key. That's the same as in the interaction that's done when the main button is pressed, challenges the app to prove ownership of the secret key. That's the same as before. Pico makes up its own key pair for that account. If that is something that takes a long time, this can be pre-computed. The same applies to the ephemeral keys that were in the previous slide. And then Pico sends the app a long-term public key for that account. And the user ID, human-readable user ID, can be defined with the app itself, the app's user interface. You don't have to type the user ID on the Pico. It can be typed in the app and then transferred to the Pico through the radio. Now, there's two cases to distinguish here, which is the case that looks like making a new Gmail account and the case that looks like setting up your online banking. In the case of setting up a Gmail account, there's no resources that are associated with you before you make this account. So once you do create the account, you get allocated however much free goodies Google is kind enough to give you, but there's nothing else. Whereas in the case of online banking, you set up online banking, presumably you already have a bank account with that bank where some money is stored, which belongs to you. And as you set up online banking the first time, these two things have to be attached so that you can use your online banking credentials to access the money that's already deposited in your account. So in that second case, there has to be something to link this new public key that's been created and sent to the app with the stuff you already had. So in this case, we use yet another channel. So the back end of the app will have sent some paper letter to the user with another authenticator. So it will have two visual codes, one that says this is a nonce that will prove that you have received this letter, and this is the visual code of the app that you will then see when you go to press the pairing button for the initial pairing with us. And so, dear Pico, acquire these two codes and only show the nonce when you are pairing with this thing of the other code, which is the one representing the bank. And so the Pico is primed to then spit out this nonce authenticator to the app when it does the initial pairing with it. And at that point, the backend will connect the two entities, so this newly created public key of the Pico and the resources that already belong to that user previously. Right, so that's the basics of how the Pico works when you have it. Now, a crucial point for a token is how does it stop working as soon as you don't have it. If someone else has it, you don't want it to work. So how can you secure something you have as opposed to something you know, something you are? It would be unacceptable if having the Pico in your hands meant having control of the Pico. And of course, this means tamper protection of the insides of the Pico, but that's, at this level, it's an engineering detail compared to the harder question of deciding how and when to lock and unlock the Pico. When is it appropriate to lock the Pico? When is it appropriate to unlock it? Many token-based systems that I have looked at actually dodge this issue. Some of them say, well, your token is like your car keys. If someone has your car keys, they can open your car and drive with it. So this solution is basically do nothing and hope that the token doesn't get stolen. Well, as fine as it goes. That's what people do with their car keys, actually. But I'm hoping for something slightly better than that. Another common cop-out is just saying, okay, you'll have to revoke and reissue some other thing. It still leaves a window of vulnerability to deal with. I mean, ultimately, it's hard to blame those who come up with this solution, because this is, you know, the step out of the box. And finally, you'll have to do that at some point, at some level. But still, we would like to produce some device whose inherent mechanisms protect the user a little better. Another common solution is to protect the token with a PIN, which, of course, reintroduces a number of the problems that we highlighted earlier. The PIN is not necessarily a bad solution. It does have its disadvantages, but it's it could be reasonable, especially if you manage to limit the rate at which one can try wrong PINs. If you get a few wrong PINs, then it takes longer and longer before other PINs can be tried, so long as this is not bypassable by opening it up and then poking around with microprobes, then this would be a good start. But of course, the PIN is still something that someone can observe. The no shoulder surfing benefit is not offered and all that kind of stuff. Plus, you will forget the PIN, or you will make up a PIN which is based on your birthday or something like that. So I have been given this talk in various places over the past few months, and I was discussing this, and one of the audiences, the issue came up. It was an audience of people who were all working on passwords. They say, yeah, well, PINs, it's a nuisance because everybody just uses birthday, and there's only 365 birthdays that you can encode in a PIN, so it's not like 10,000 different PINs. It's just 365. And then another guy gave this thing, which for me was the highlight of the whole conference. He says, okay, you know why you people write their spouse's birthday as the PIN? It's not because they fear that they might forget the PIN. It's because they fear they might forget their spouse's birthday, which would get them into much worse trouble. So, PIN. Okay, PIN is what it is. If we could do better than that, then we'd be happier. So, assuming that you have some way of locking your Pico or your token, whatever it is, how can you decide, how can it decide when is the good time to unlock? And the answer for Pico is that it has family feelings with other siblings, and the Pico siblings all together make the environment safe for the Pico, and it unlocks, and when the siblings are away, then the Pico thinks that it's a hostile world, and it locks itself. So Pico siblings are small gadgets which have some short-range radio interface, and not much of a UI at all. So while the Pico device itself is something that has buttons, a display, a camera, you have to use it, these other things, you don't have to use them, you just wear them and let them create this aura of confidence and safety around you. And depending on your gender, age, and fashion sense, they could be nose piercing, ear piercing, watch, a belt, a cell phone, shoes, dentures, pipe, glasses, wig, whatever else suits you. So each of these things has some kind of embedded, small, short-range radio magic, which can be interacting bidirectionally with the Pico, and I'll have something to say about the protocol that these entities should follow. These Pico siblings are going to be used in the context of a K out of N secret sharing, whereby if you have K shares, you are able to reconstruct the key that unlocks the storage of your Pico. And if you have fewer than K shares, then the storage of your Pico is locked and cannot be accessed, and even if you have physical access to the Pico, so long as this is not stored in somewhere stupid once it's reconstructed, then you would not be able to get at what's inside. I have some additional bits down here, which are two more shares which are different in kind from the ones we see that are worn. And you could you could conceivably even make them weigh more in the K out of N pattern, assigning them a higher weight than one, if appropriate. I haven't quite decided what's the best thing. And they would have a longer timeout than the other ones. One would be a biometric to prove that it's you who are there. The Pico has a camera. It could acquire an iris scan with the camera. And here, I must say, there's lots of privacy concerns about using biometrics for authentication. But it must be underlined that in this case, it's not Big Brother who is acquiring your biometric. And it's not like the checkpoint, your fingerprinted, your scanned, and so on at border control. It's your own device that acquires your biometric, and so you shouldn't have the same privacy concerns because this is not passed on to anybody else. However, there's the other difference that the biometric that is verified in a local context can be bypassed in ways that don't apply when it's an armed guard supervising the acquisition of the biometric. So all these businesses of putting a gummy finger instead of your finger, or putting a photograph or a screen with an image of your iris instead of the real iris, you can do if you have someone else's Pico in your lab and you're trying to open it up, and you cannot do if you are at the border and you're trying to bypass. So biometric should be seen with all these caveats. But anyway, biometric would be another share that has to be there. If the Pico is locked and you want to unlock it, you also have to offer a biometric. And another one, again qualitatively different, is a connection to some network server, your network server, which will issue another share. And the nice thing about this is that unlike all the other shares, unlike all these shares, and even this share, I mean, it may have been your finger chopped off, in this case, if you don't have the Pico with you, you can still revoke it remotely. You can contact this server and say, okay, now don't issue this share anymore. So if the Pico is locked and someone tries to unlock it, it will try to talk to this network server, but it will say, no share. And this is a nice feature. Now, perceptive question from the audience I got at this point was, okay, if you have lost your Pico, how are you going to authenticate to your network server to tell it that it should not issue the share anymore? So, of course, this has to be addressed, and what I consider a suitable answer would be to have a different secret sharing between your friends, that you can say, okay, if enough of my friends say that to the server, then the server will issue this revocation. And I set up a few friends in advance whom I trust a combination of to issue this revocation if I manage to contact them while I'm away. So someone steals my thing, I phone up my friends, enough of them that I can have a quorum for making the server stop sending out the shares. So the Pico siblings are pinged by the Pico regularly, so that the Pico is always on the lookout. Am I still near my siblings? Am I still near my siblings? If not, then I will lock myself up. How does this work? Well, this is a protocol that still needs to be designed. These are the requirements for this protocol, the properties that I would like this protocol to have. The Pico must be able to sense the nearby Pico siblings, short-range radio, and the Pico sibling should only respond to its master Pico. It should not respond to queries from other entities. The share that is sent by the Pico sibling cannot be eavesdropped. Well, of course, it can be eavesdropped, but it cannot be used as in the form in which it is eavesdropped. It should not be possible for the eavesdropper to infer the identities or long-term pseudonyms of the entities that are communicating. This is all privacy requirements. The Pico is able to detect and ignore old replayed messages from other instances of the protocol. And the Pico can detect and ignore relay attacks where you have, for example, an enemy who has captured the Pico and has it somewhere else, but has rigged up this table with a repeater that listens to the Pico siblings I'm wearing and sends this back to the Pico, pretending to the Pico that it is still near me, whereby it is instead somewhere else in the hands of the opponent. So this is something that with a distance bounding protocol between the Pico and the Pico siblings, you should detect and reject, because of course relay attack would completely kill the idea of sensing proximity. So this is a few more references. This is something I presented at the Security Protocols Workshop in 2000 about this family feelings idea, also came out of a discussion then. This is an independently proposed KATOBAN secret sharing of what I call Pico siblings to enable a master device to work, and this is something that Bart Pernell told me yesterday had been published in 2001. We were unaware of each other until yesterday. I mean, I checked with we can have more correspondence about this next. This is some work that a student of Bart has done on implementing this previous one by Desmet and others. And this is the Hanke-Kuhn protocol for preventing relay attacks, distance bounding for RFID. So what happens with Pico locking and unlocking? I have given you the flavor for this already. And the storage of the Pico is encrypted with some key that is reconstructed, synthesized out of this KATOBAN secret sharing. And imagine that, for example, the N in KATOBAN is 20. So you may have 20 Pico siblings, but you only need maybe 3 plus the 2 special shares, or change that if you're going to assign a different weight to the special shares. And what this means is that you register all these 20 Pico siblings to enable you to wear different earrings on different days, and any 3 of them plus 2 will unlock the Pico. And of course you have to keep the other ones in a safe place, because otherwise someone can get your other earrings and unlock your Pico that way. Also, you want some of these Pico siblings that you register to be stored in a really, really safe place, like a safe deposit box, because that's what you're going to use to start again if you lose the stuff you have, if you also lose your Pico siblings, they break or they get stolen. It's really unlikely that you will remove all the Pico siblings, because they're made to be as closely embedded to you as possible. Some people have even suggested to have them implanted under your skin, but still you want to have a way of getting out of a situation in which you have lost control of them, or lost them, or they broke, or whatever. So the Pico pings its shares periodically. There's a decay timer which says, I haven't heard from this specific share for this much, and when this timer expires, then this share is considered to be forgotten. And if you have fewer than K shares, then the Pico doesn't work. But after a timer for the whole Pico expires, then the Pico switches itself off, and then you have to reacquire all the shares, not just the ones that needed refreshing. So I've mentioned the other 2 special shares, and I've mentioned how to talk to your server if you don't have your Pico anymore. Remote disabling, I mentioned as one feature of this network server. The other one, which is also important, is that it can provide you an audit trail of the unlockings. Every time that the network server issues its network share, it can say, I did that on that day, I was requested at that time from this network address that the share be sent. And so this provides a log of what happens. This is something for the benefit of crypto geeks. What happens if someone tries to coerce your passwords out of you? So you have this paranoid threat model with passwords that they will kidnap you and torture you until you tell them your passwords. And can we make the Pico resistant to something like that? Well, the design feature is that the Pico cannot be unlocked. Once the Pico is locked and you don't have enough Pico siblings with you, then there's nothing you know or nothing you can do that will unlock the Pico. So if you had a rational torture, which is a big if, then this removes the incentive to torture, because whatever they do, you still can't unlock the damn Pico. Now, this doesn't guard against the possibility that they might torture just because they like it, or just because they don't like you, or just out of revenge because you had a Pico instead of a password that you could tell them after enough torturing. So it's not a complete solution to that. But still, I mean, as far as a crypto geek enjoys doing these things, there is a property that Pico has that the passwords don't have. With the passwords, you would still be able to give out the password, whereas with the Pico, if you manage to destroy one of your Pico siblings and then there's fewer than K around, there's nothing you can do to bring it back, unless, of course, they accompany you to the safe deposit box where you have the extra ones and say, get another one out. So there's a bunch of stuff here which we can go into if you enjoy that kind of stuff, but this is not really something to take too seriously. And I guess the ultimate conclusion about this is that if you have a way of accessing some kind of backup, then you can always, in one way or another, be coerced to access the backup or have someone else access the backup for you. But with the Pico, it is possible, if you are prepared to completely lose access to the Pico yourself, to put yourself in a situation where, if they attack you, you cannot access the Pico, nobody else can ever access the Pico, and that's it. And in theory, this would remove the rational incentive for torturing you. But if to persuade your torturer that this is the case, you have to make them read a 30-page paper, then this may not be a very convincing argument, and you may end up in an unfortunate situation, even though you were right. So, oh yes, I also mentioned that another thing you can do here is that you could split your stuff into things you really need to have even while you're away. If you're, take a step back. I am coming here to another country, another continent. I usually have a big bunch of door keys. I'm not carrying this whole bunch of door keys here because I might lose it. I mean, I'm not worried so much that I might be tortured to get these keys, but I'm worried that I might lose them. It did happen in the past. So I only carry one key, which is the key to my front door to get back home. But all the other ones, I do leave at home. So you can do the same with your Pico. You don't have to carry everything every time you are away from your safe place, every time you're on a trip and you have a higher chance than usual of losing your Pico. You can then have a separate travel Pico with only the credentials you expect to need on that trip, and you can leave the other one at home. Now, obviously, this needs another caveat, which is you don't want your Picos to proliferate in the same sense that the passwords proliferate. But this is not something that one should worry too much about, because this is just like establishing two security levels, a classification of levels between your authenticators, and it's just two classes. You can make it three classes if you are into that kind of stuff, but it doesn't have to become one different token for every account, which, by the way, is a problem of certain tokens. They will only authenticate you to one specific app. So next, after how your Pico stops working if someone else has it, how Pico ensures you can recover if you no longer have it. So this wonderful state diagram is a son of some work I did some 10 years ago about the resurrecting duckling, which was a way of doing authentication between entities that could not rely on a central authority. So in the resurrecting duckling, you had an imprintable state and an imprinted state, similar to how the ducklings that Konrad Lorenz experimented with were ready to be imprinted to any mother as soon as they came out of the egg. And at that time, anything that moved would become by default the mother, even if it looked like a bearded Austrian scientist, as Mr. Lorenz was. And then from then on, they would be faithfully following Mr. Lorenz wherever he went, quacking and not going to bed unless he quacked back and all that kind of stuff. So I will not go into any greater depth on the resurrecting duckling model, but this is an instance of it with some variations. And these two states are imprinted, and this state is imprintable. And imprintable is what you get when you buy a new Pico. It's virgin. And you get this Pico, and what you do, you will... I have a suspicion that this arrow goes in the wrong direction. So I have grabbed an older version of this diagram, which has at least one mistake. This arrow should, as I said, go in this direction. So what happens is you have an imprintable Pico, and you define a set of Pico siblings, and as you pair the Pico siblings with your Pico, you go into this set where the Pico is imprinted to this family of Pico siblings, or this family of n Pico siblings, and it is unlocked, but it is now imprinted. Someone else pointed at another mistake.
Invert all arrows labeled Pico siblings in your
hat. Indeed so. So this is another mistake, yes? Well, this one doesn't make any difference if I invert it or not. So yes, this one and this one are reversed. If you, those of you with a computer who are checking the paper will see I have the correct version in the paper. So I apologize for this. From an imprintable, by defining a set of Pico siblings, you go into this unlocked but imprinted state. And something else? No. Okay, from this state where the Pico is unlocked, means usable by you, you can press the buttons. You press the main button, you can press the pairing button, it still stays unlocked. You can change the set of Pico siblings. You will have some complicated procedure for unpairing with the previous set and repairing with the new set. However, if you have a timeout on the sensing the Pico siblings with the ping protocol we described previously, or if you switch off your Pico, then you get into this locked state where it is imprinted. It is still paired to the same set of Pico siblings, but it won't work. It will not do anything until you unlock it. And how do you unlock it? This arrow, which goes the wrong way, will let you unlock it by having enough Pico siblings plus the other two shares. You get back into this state. When you are in the locked state, you can also make a backup. So I should be saying something about backups. What I also wrote here at the top is that regular human beings never take backups. So we have to do something that will cause the backups to happen regardless of what they would voluntarily do. And the solution that I am considering using is to have the recharge action of the Pico be tied to a backup. So there will be some kind of docking station into which you plug your Pico for recharge the same way as you plug your mobile phone into the charger. And whenever you plug the Pico into the docking station, then a backup is taken. The Pico is plugged into the docking station in the locked state, and you take the backup by taking a dump of the memory in the locked state, so this backup is inherently encrypted. If you have this backup, you can go and buy a new Pico and restore a backup into the Pico, and it becomes an imprinted Pico, but a locked one. So you can only unlock the Pico, even the new one that you just restored the backup into, using this wrong arrow, by using the Pico siblings and then bringing it there. So a locked backup contains the link between the Pico and its Pico siblings, and so it can be unlocked only by the presence of K of the appropriate Pico siblings. Something that you will be familiar with if you have ever read this ancient resurrecting duckling paper is the seppuku. Seppuku is a Japanese word for the ritual suicide of the samurai, where on order of your lord, you would take your short sword and open up your belly. So on order of your, an unfortunate mix of metaphors, but in this case, on order of your mother duck, the duckling will slit its belly. So this is the action of seppuku, but it's less bloody than you might imagine at first, because in this case, the death of the duckling just means it goes back to the imprintable state. So it is not the death of the body, it is just the death of the soul. This is why the model was called the resurrecting duckling, because you have a body of the duckling that stays there and is visited by a succession of souls as the duckling gets imprintable and imprinted to a different mother and then kills itself, then again can be imprinted to another one. So you have a succession of souls visiting this this body, which is the reverse of what happens in certain religions where you have one soul that visits different bodies. So reverse metempsychosis. So going back to our pico, I think we've examined all the arrows in this diagram. Of course, some of the arrows hide considerable complexity, especially this one, for example, change the set of pico siblings. Presumably you have to bring the previous pico siblings there, disable them, unpair them. You may want to pair them to something else, to another another pico. And all that is just hidden in this diagram, but this gives a good overview of how the thing should proceed. Other notable features. I have no idea what's coming up next. I forgot. Continuous authentication. Oh, yeah, I already told you about that. So it would be great if authentication worked as with telepathy, where you say, okay, I know that you are there, therefore you will be let in, and I know that you are not there, and therefore the app will lock. And usually, with the password, this doesn't happen. The app just samples at the point of checking the password and then assumes, okay, I hope that it still works, and maybe it has a timeout, okay, like I do. And if the timeout is made shorter for having less exposure to attackers, then it becomes a usability burden. If the timeout is very long, then it becomes a security exposure. Whereas in here, with continuous authentication, we are in a much better situation because we are not burdening the user with an action, but we have an almost null window of exposure between between checks. So this is something that we did many years ago at one of my previous workplaces, Active Badges and Personal Interactive Computing Objects, is a paper by Roy Wonton and Andy Hopper that we developed at Olivetti Research Cambridge. And this was a system where you were wearing an electronic badge, and as you went near your workstation, it would unlock the workstation. It went away and it relocked it. But it was nothing to write home about in terms of the security features. It was more a technology demonstrator. Whereas a properly secure system was built by Mark Corner and Brian Noble, and won a Best Paper Award at Mobicom in 2002. This is a very interesting paper to look at for a device that would unlock a full disk encryption laptop as you went near it by sensing the presence of some short-range radio gadget that you were wearing with you. So next, delegation and escrow. I'm wary of the timeout warning, so maybe it's something I'll take up if we have questions about it. Passwords not used for authentication, also something which is slightly more esoteric. But I mean, I just want to say a couple of words about this, that if I'm attempting to replace all passwords, then this is perhaps the most intellectually interesting and challenging thing, which is some passwords are not really used for authentication. I realized after thinking seriously about it, the password for encrypting a file is not really me authenticating to anyone. I'm not authenticating to the program that encrypts my file, I'm not authenticating to anything. I'm just providing something that is then mangled in some way and is used for encrypting the file. And I could encrypt the same file with a different password, with a number of different passwords. And there's no authentication involved. It's not a credential. It's just some bits that I have to feed for the thing to work. And if Pico has to replace all passwords, it cannot make a distinction. Oh, I'm not going to replace this one because it's not an authentication password. It has to replace this as well. And it can't work in the same way as with the authentication ones. So what I think we could do in this case is we could have the SSL-like machinery to talk to the app that does the encryption, just so that I would then have a secure channel to talk with it. However, after that, I'd have to send some bit string, which the Pico would have to memorize, which would be the moral equivalent of a stored password. And in this case, I don't see a way that the Pico could prevent phishing and something else popping up and saying, give me the bit string for decrypting this file. And I'm not sure that anything else could, even if it's a completely different design from the Pico. Interesting thing to think about here. Other password replacement solutions. This is the matrix too small to read, and which should actually have many more lines. And we are currently working on making these columns more sensible, clustering them, ensuring that we have all the benefits that we want to consider, that they are as orthogonal as possible, and so on and so on. And happy to take questions on this or anything else. Compromises to reach critical mass. I don't think there's too much to say about this, but this Roger Needham quote is worth pointing you at. Roger Needham, who was my academic grandfather, the PhD supervisor of my PhD supervisor, once said, "Optimization is the process of taking something that works and replacing it with something that almost works but costs less." So it may be suggested by several that we optimize the Pico in double quotes for backwards compatibility so that we reach critical mass, because otherwise you may never bootstrap it. So there's a number of undesirable things we might have to do just to get there. I think that the one I would consider sensible is just to use the Pico for some of your passwords, and until the Pico has had a successful hostile review, successful for the Pico, I mean, then you would not use it for your highest security things, and you would still use password for that. But you still reduce the number of passwords you used by using the Pico for your lower grade things. Future works, I have one student who's interested in working on building an initial prototype. That's very nice. I hope to have more. And let's conclude with this slide here. So my introduction was that password requirements, as we present them to regular users, are self-contradictory, and it's impossible for any regular human being to satisfy them. Therefore, it's counterproductive just to present small-scale improvements over passwords. We have to take a bold step, and this will take a while to actually be deployed, but I want to eliminate passwords everywhere. I think we should aim to take a bold step, even though it's not going to work immediately. So we can't go on with passwords in the long term, and this is not to say that Pico will fix the problem immediately, but this is to say, let's imagine the best we can do if we didn't have the constraints that now passwords are dominating. What's the best we can do? Here's a proposal. If that's not the best, how can we do better than this? But at least let's discuss this constructively, as opposed to just saying passwords are no good. There we go.
Alan Sherman, UMBC. I like your proposal. Would you please comment on the system's resistance against man-in-the-middle attack, especially on initial pairing, but also at subsequent use, including but not restricted to an adversary who gains control over the display and puts up a fake visual ID?
Right. So as you note, the man in the middle doesn't have much leverage after the initial pairing because it's protected by the peacock already knowing the public key. If the man in the middle is there during the initial pairing, it may be able to fool the peacock into doing a pairing with something different, which will have its own key. And then from then on, the peacock will talk to this man in the middle, thinking that it thinks to the other one. But for this to work, the man in the middle has to be there at every interaction, because as soon as there's one where it's not there, then the peacock will notice that the thing it thought it would interact with doesn't recognize it. Says, you don't have a pairing with this. How come I don't have a pairing? Because I knew that I paired with it. Also, the man in the middle would have to do something that the multi-channel protocol almost certainly will defeat, which is you can have a man in the middle on the radio channel fairly easily, although we've seen an ingenious solution against that in one of the sessions yesterday afternoon. But you have a much harder time doing a man in the middle on the visual channel, because you'll have to present something without the user noticing that the screen is being replaced by something else. So you would, I mean, as with every, there's nowhere I can draw here, but as with every man in the middle instance, you have to have two faces, one facing the client and pretending to be the server, and one facing the server and pretending to be the client. And in both of these cases, you'd have to do it. And on the visual channel, it's less easy than on the radio channel. So the multi-channel protocol affords extra protection for against this attack. Now, there's problems with the cases where the visual side of the protocol cannot easily be used. So for what if you have an application where you don't have a screen that could display the visual code? In some cases, you can get away with putting a fixed sticker, for example, on the thing with the encoding of the public key, but that may not work for dynamic situations. So it's something that is the fact that the visual code is not going to be there all the time may be opening a few problems there. But when the visual code is there, then I think that it's less of a vulnerability.
Hi, I'm Carson Gaspar from Insert Your Favorite Large Bank here. A couple of points. First of all, I noticed you mentioned nested authentication. I think that's going to be critical. Two examples are I need to authenticate to my job via my Citrix session. Real world, you know, I have to authenticate to my machine, then authenticate via it somehow. Another example would be for your encryption case and also for other command line, you know, administrative kinds of cases where you would want, you can avoid the phishing aspect by that encryption key only being valid in the context of an authenticated session. And basically saying, you know, I have to send this credential wrapped inside the this app is the one wanting, this computer login app is the one wanting to decrypt this thing. So the only people who could fish would be people who had taken over that, you know, computer.
Yeah, I think that the nested sessions issue is easy conceptually, but difficult in practice. I think that it has to be solved because I will have a session that I logged into with the Pico, and inside it, applications that I logged to with the Pico. And it has to be all unwrapped in the right order. Otherwise, when I log in and log out, I get instead the effect of, you know, losing all the things that were open, and that just can't work.
Yeah. UX will be very interesting. Mm-hmm. The other point I wanted to make is you have carefully not mentioned revocation of the app on the app side. So I am Google, I'm using your new lovely system, and my self-signed key and the database of all of my users' public keys has now walked out the door. What do I do now? That will need to be addressed in some way. I think you're going to come back to the fundamental truth that you always need an online trusted third party for any authentication system, and anyone who says anything different is not read enough papers.
Thank you.
Okay, so from another conference that I I've helped organize. I've learned that you should try to make some constructive comments, at least before you make the negative comments. So a couple points I wanted to say first for. I like your use of original artwork in your slides. I like your little drawing that you had. And I think the Pico sibling as a general concept is kind of innovative and interesting. However, I think you really need to look at a 2008 paper written by Ben Laurie and Abe Singer on providing a trusted path, because the problem you're really trying to solve is not authentication, or not passwords per se, but how do you provide a trusted path between the user and the service provider when they need to authorize transactions. And it turns out that what most people are doing is authorizing transactions, such as if I'm shopping at Amazon, I don't actually need to authenticate, especially not if I'm just shopping, if I'm browsing. It's when I'm making a purchase, I want to be able to authorize that purchase in a way that both sides can attest that to what was being purchased is what I agreed to purchase.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Indeed. So yeah. The paper you're talking about, the red pill and blue pill, is yeah. one of the papers I reference in the full paper here, sorry.
Okay, I didn't see the paper, so I'm glad you referenced it, but I think you should read it more closely because I think you missed some of the point. Because the way the system you've designed is still, I have to disagree with your statement that that man in the middle on the visual display would be difficult. Okay, once somebody's taken control of the user's computer that display is on, man in the middle of anything, including their display, is trivial, and it's impossible for the user to know if they're actually talking, if what they see on the screen is coming from their service provider or from an attacker in the middle. So they could think they're authenticating the service provider and just authenticate to the attacker at any time. And that could be a persistent compromise. So once they have compromised the initial pairing, the attacker can continue to use that for everything that goes on. And if the user's lucky, the attacker's not there during one of the sessions and they detect that the public key, the server's public key is different. But very likely that the attacker continues to own the computer for a long time, certainly long enough to serve their purposes.
Right. The Ben Laurie paper makes a number of valid points, especially on the fact that the device has to be just a device for that, with the smallest possible operating system. It shouldn't be something that's general purpose and so on. It should have the trusted path. It should be something that has the smallest possible attack surface, because it is impossible to secure a general purpose operating system and so on. It still will be exposed to the same issues about how do you do the initial pairing. It doesn't deal with the multi-channel protocol for the pairing, but it will still have one way.
What it deals with is that what the user is interacting with is the display on that device, not the display on their general purpose computer that may have been compromised.
Right.
And that's the fundamental difference. So it's more than just, I just use this device to send this password. It's I use this device to see and record what transactions I'm authorizing. And
right.
That's what's missing for me.
Okay.
Hi, Dirk Balvins, Google. So you laid out in the beginning a lot of things that are wrong with passwords, and I certainly agree. But there's a few things that are kind of nice about passwords. I think you mentioned that they're kind of easy to use in a sense. I don't need a device and so forth. But there's some other, yeah, those are the things that are all wrong with them, right? Or hard to remember, not very secure. But there are some features that are kind of nice. Like if I really got mugged in London, right, for real, I can call up my secretary, right, and tell him, hey, can you get into my calendar and, you know, or just into my email or something and look something up for me, and I can tell him over the phone what my password is. And so there's sort of emergent, I guess, properties that people have come to expect of these authentication systems that they use, which can you comment a little bit on sort of which of those you're prepared to give up for this system?
So in one of the slides that I decided not to spend any time because I was being shown a timeout, I mentioned delegation and escrow. So you could conceivably give you could split your private passwords and your corporate passwords into two sets. And for the corporate ones, you could have a Pico that you share with your secretary, if that's what you like to do. And she could have a Pico which has the same credentials as you. And she could have enough stuff to, I mean, enough Pico siblings of the same set that she could even restore your backups, use them as if she were you. So that is something that is possible. Other things that you can do in this context is you can make sure that if you are run over by a bus, then your company can still access your stuff because in the corporate safe there is a Pico with your corporate credentials. You could do basically the equivalent of corporate key escrow for your credentials. You could do a private version of that if you were so inclined as a kind of digital will. You say, okay, you give your spouse access to your credentials for the sake of argument for accessing your bank account if it's not already set up at the application level with a different interaction with the bank.